And good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis and the late Patty Fink. And our guests today are Michael J. Hindman and Casey Crummell. They are attorneys and they are representing a transgender woman who isn't getting the health insurance that she feels she deserves. Is that a good way to put it?
The coverage
yeah. that she feels that she deserves, meaning covering the whole person. They filed a lawsuit which could end up being really a landmark case. I don't know of other cases that have been filed. You're filing it in the Affordable Care Act, under the Affordable Care Act.
That is part of one of the causes of action is a violation of the anti-discrimination part of the ACA, yeah.
There is a case in Colorado that's specific to Colorado state law against a non-discrimination law that's statewide. And that one's in progress, too.
And that's against Aetna as well.
Yes, against Aetna as well, yeah.
Yes. And then there's one in there was one in Minnesota that kind of fell apart because there was an issue on a very technical matter that the defendant didn't qualify as being covered under the ACA or under this provision of it. And that's all I'm aware of that deal with this.
So why don't we just start from the beginning about this individual that you all are representing and what happened?
Well, this individual is a friend of Casey's, and she'd been talking about her to me for quite a while. In early this year, Charlize, our client, began her transition male to female in 2011. This year, at the beginning of the year, she began to present at work. And as part of her transition or gender confirmation, she required breast implants. And she underwent the surgery in March, but that they're not covered under Aetna's policy. Aetna does have a specific gender transition policy, and it's fairly well researched. They've put some effort into learning about the standards, the medical standards. And in many ways, their policy reflects the global and national standards for medical necessity of treating gender dysphoria. But in a few areas, they choose not to. And they kind of selectively say, well, we're not going to cover breast implants for a male to female transition, but they will cover mastectomy for a male to female transition.
And that's consistent with pretty much every policy that that treats gender dysphoria, but it's arbitrary and it's inherently discriminatory to, you know, to provide top surgery for one gender and not for the other. And then also she was denied short-term disability, which I think is true for anybody who's going through a gender confirmation surgery. And the reason that they deny short-term disability is because they say that the procedure is not medically necessary, even though their policy clearly says that it's medically necessary.
Well, so, yeah, and it's more the actual rejection letter for the short-term disability was that it was not related to the treatment of a, quote, illness. And although
their policy shows that it is.
Correct.
Yeah. So and what did they write it off as? It's just a cosmetic procedure?
Yes, strictly. With every other part of the recognized procedure for treating gender dysphoria, for the most part, it's all treated as treatment of gender dysphoria, which is recognized as a disorder or illness or however you want to couch it, you know, in different ways, but all under the same umbrella. And except for when it comes to the breast implants. There may be a couple other exceptions where they just pick something out and say, we're not going to cover that. And so, for instance, Charlize is going to have her bottom surgery, her genital surgery, coming up in the spring, right?
February
of 2016. We're going to go through the process again. She's going to apply for the short-term disability benefits to recover from that surgery. That part of her surgery is going to be covered under her policy. So they just kind of selectively pick out some things that aren't.
Why?
Well, it's speculation on my part. We haven't gotten to the answer yet in this stage of the game in the lawsuit, but it seems fairly clear to me that Aetna is afraid that if they categorize breast implants for anybody as being anything other than cosmetic, that's going to open a door that they're going to have to cover everybody from having breast implants who wants them, who's covered under their policy.
Well, when Patty had her breast implants, yes, she clearly did it for, you know, it was cosmetic.
Sure. It's I obvious. Mean,
and she...
Yeah, because I want them some big, you know.
Right. So, I mean, just because you're doing the same thing medically for two different people doesn't mean that in one you're not treating something and in the other it's cosmetic.
Right.
You have to have a very specific diagnosis.
Right, you do. You have to have two letters from a therapist and a letter from a psychiatrist that diagnoses you with gender dysphoria. And of course, insurance companies are businesses, and certainly the idea here is to save costs for them. But you know, we came across a statistic, as a matter of fact, Leslie McMurray pointed us towards a statistic where to cover transgender health care and include all medically necessary procedures, as well as all, not just medically necessary procedures for gender dysphoria, but also, you know, including these other insurance companies that won't even treat an ear infection for transgender people, to open up that coverage, because there are so few transgender people. Came out to what, Mike, 90 cents per year?
Yeah, that was actually when San Francisco, their policy for their city employees, when they began to have fully inclusive coverage for all of the city employees that included coverage of all transgender individuals, yeah, it caused the premiums to go up 80 cents per person.
And in San Francisco, I think the first year they did, because they hadn't been doing it for years, so the pent-up demand was two people. The next year there was one person.
Right.
And since then, some years there are no people.
Right. So they're protecting against a storm that's not going to come, mm-hmm. in some ways. Dave, you brought up a really good point, and this is critical to understand about this, that gender treatment of gender dysphoria is, again, anything but cosmetic. And as Casey pointed out also, they Aetna's policy requires each individual's medical providers or healthcare professionals to present letters or testimony in some way saying, this is what my patient needs to treat her condition or his condition. And then they just choose to ignore it whenever they feel like it. That's the problem. And it's obviously anything but cosmetic. And the standard, really the medical standard on this, which is established by an organization called the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, also known as WPATH, began coming out with the medical standards for treatment of gender dysphoria, I think 15 to 20 years ago, and they constantly revise it with the best medical information available.
And those were really based on the Harry Benjamin standards early on.
Are they?
Right, and he was like an early pioneer, and then the WPATH took over kind of
they
extending
did, and
those.
They clarified, you know, as to what's medically necessary and why, where the Benjamin standards weren't necessarily complete. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some previous cases that rely on the Benjamin standard that tried to assert that male to female transgenders don't need top surgery where female to males do, because when they start estrogen treatment or hormone treatment, that causes them to have breasts and therefore they don't need implants. And right. And that was allegedly based on the Benjamin standard, and WPATH came along and helped clarify that. So
interesting. You know, I'm so glad you all are here to clarify this, because it's not really something I think most of us have thought about. We see so many trans individuals, male to female, who have had breast implants. I just haven't really thought about how they were covered as far as the cost. And in your research, have you found that most of the individuals who've had the top surgery, have they paid it out of pocket?
Yes.
So that's how they're doing
it. Are you aware of any that are covered?
No, I've never heard of anybody, and we at least I do, I ask. I'm nosy, you know?
Nothing wrong with that.
Especially when I meet somebody who's in the middle of a transition, because it's such a difficult process and it's such a ripe area for people to discriminate if they want to, that I'm always curious about any challenges that those people are facing. I think it's very important. And fortunately, our client, despite that she works in Greenville, Texas, her employer, L3 Communications, has been very open to her transition and supportive.
You know, that was one thing that we found in gay and lesbian rights also, that it was the corporations that took the lead, and it was, you know, who knows who that was dragging behind, but companies are taking the lead. There are some companies that do cover, but they're self-insured.
Right, they are, and I think that these big, large corporate insurance companies their policies on transgender healthcare are so discriminatory that it's a very important area of law right now. Aetna, as we were talking about earlier, says that they are the most LGBT-friendly health insurance provider in the country,
which is based on a marketing decision,
absolutely.
That's the best. Wow.
Right, and I really do think that they might be the best out there. But.
And you know what I bet they base it on? Back in the 80s, when AIDS came along.
The HIV coverage.
Yeah, their HIV coverage was more complete first.
And I think, you know, I from what I've seen so far, honestly, I think Aetna's policy is one of the things I was telling Laurent about this in the pre-show meeting. What's interesting to me is that they put a lot of effort into this. I mean, the policy itself, when you read it, there's pages and pages of sites and references, including to the WPATH standards, and in many ways the policy tracks the WPATH standards. So it's not like they just went, We're not going to put any effort into this. We're going to ignore the issue. The thing that's particularly difficult or frustrating about this is that you know they know what the standard is. I mean, they show you right in the policy. They've studied it. They have cited the most up to date standards, and yet, in spite of that, they just arbitrarily kind of pick out, well, in this situation, this situation, this situation, we're going to ignore that, even though we know it's the standard. And they do it in such a way, in this case, where it works out, it's pure discrimination. There's no way around it.
Now, one of the things that you're filing under is the Affordable Care Act. Affordable Care Act doesn't allow for discrimination based on pre-existing conditions, it equalizes all coverage, really. What are you suing under the ACA?
It's let me just get going on this, but this is the most novel part of the lawsuit. The Affordable Care Act has an anti-discrimination provision, section 1557, and it wasn't especially well written. And it's a little
None
bit
of it
foggy,
was.
Right? And I'll get to a fun fact on that in a minute. But
I hope you didn't have to read it in your research.
Yes, I did. I'm
the
sorry.
Whole thing.
Yes.
Oh God.
I'm still getting over it. So, that provision is, again, it prevents any government contractor or any organization that receives federal funds, and that's a long explanation on what qualifies under that flag, but prevents them from discriminating on all the usual grounds, including sex or gender. And then earlier this year, President Obama signed an executive order to define that and say, with respect to this, that also includes gender identity and sexual orientation. So it's specific that no health insurance company to discriminate coverage decisions based upon those two bases, including all the usual non-discriminatory things. One of the odd things about it is it hints at there's a civil rights remedy to it. In other words, just like it would be in a straight employment discrimination case based upon race or sex or gender. But it doesn't specifically say which one or how. It just says there is one. And so this is the part that I find odd about the legislature, after all their fighting and bickering about the Affordable Care Act generally. Part of this is they wrote into the law any ambiguity or confusion about what any part of this means, we're going to leave it to the Secretary of Health and Human Services to define it for us. Okay, instead of we're not going to relitigate it and all that. We're just, hey, you guys figure it out. So in September of this year, the Office of Civil Rights from Health and Human Services called for papers, or comments, they call it, on how to clarify that part of the law. In other words, which will give not just a part of the law that says, hey, employer or hey, insurance company, you can't discriminate, but for the employee or the insured who was discriminated against to get an actual civil rights remedy, just like they would for any other discrimination case. And that's where we're pushing the ball a little bit faster than maybe it is, because that hasn't clearly been defined what the remedy is, but we're claiming it anyway. It's going to exist by the time we need it.
We need to take a break. We're talking to Michael Heineman and Casey Krummel. Our guests are, they are our guests. I'm Dave. Yeah, not words aren't coming out right.
Use your words.
Whenever I do the Jewish Music Hour before our show, this show just suffers. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with LaRon Landis and Patty Fink and her breast implants. We will be back with more after this. And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. KNON is having its first annual toy drive. KNON's collecting toys for the kids at Children's Medical Center. KNON will be accepting toys at our studios from now until December 20th. On the final day, Sunday, December 20th, we'll have a toy drive party from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., so during our show. Mm-hmm. And it says it's going to be all music, but
yeah, we'll talk through it.
Yeah, we'll just talk. There'll be KNON DJs here, food. Bring us a new unwrapped toy for the children. For info or sponsorships, 214-828-9500, extension 227. I can never even get through an ad, can I, without making comments. I'm not supposed to do that, which is why they never ask me to record them. We're talking to Michael Heineman and Casey Krummel. They filed a lawsuit based on discrimination under the Affordable Care Act, among other things, for a transgender client.
And before the show, we talked about the fact that Aetna will cover, or I guess most of the policies, not just Aetna, will cover a female-to-male transition top surgery, but not a male-to-female top surgery. That's blatant. And you said that they have not offered a defense or response yet.
No, we heard from their date to file an answer in the Northern District Federal Court here in Texas is in the next few days. We heard from their attorneys from New York Wednesday.
Yes, Wednesday afternoon.
Asking for an extension to respond until January 11th, which is a very unusual response to ask for a more than a month extension just to file a response of some kind. So,
right. I'd be really interested to hear what kind of response they come up with, because again, that's blatant.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things we were talking about with breast implants is they're considering it cosmetic. What about a woman who's had a mastectomy due to cancer?
Again, in their policy, they have made exceptions for breast implants in some circumstances, and that would be one of them. So again,
because that's actually more cosmetic than this is, but it's not cosmetic. I don't mean to put it
right
in that category,
right,
really.
Because and to say that that's medically necessary when a woman who's had, and not to undermine any sensitivity towards a woman who's had breast cancer and had to have a mastectomy, but there's no gender dysphoria that woman's experiencing that's documented, and there's no medically necessary note that has to come from her one or three treatment providers.
One friend of mine, the way she described it, she was just uncomfortable. once she had the mastectomy, and she was so much more comfortable after she had an implant after surgery.
Right, and we've heard that itchy sweater analogy, that a lot of people who suffer from gender dysphoria, who feel like they were, you know, born a gender different than who they actually are, feel like they have on an itchy sweater that their mom bought them and they just can't take it off, mm-hmm. is that they just feel so uncomfortable when they look in the mirror. And when they're able to resolve that and look in the mirror and see who they truly are, that cures the gender dysphoria and that it is a treatable condition.
So it's very similar reasons. You would give it to somebody who's a breast cancer survivor because she's just very uncomfortable and you want to make her more comfortable.
Right.
But it's not medically necessary, really. With gender dysphoria,
it is
medically necessary for their psychological health. And
exactly.
Actually, for a breast cancer person,
right.
It's also psychological.
But go ahead.
And I've also heard the argument, you know, that from a cost perspective, that if the insurance company's real concern is cutting costs, then the cost of keeping, and maybe it doesn't fall back onto the actual corporate company, but the cost of taking care of somebody who suffers from gender dysphoria far outweighs that it would to treat it. And when we look at the homelessness and the
unemployment,
transgender population that winds up incarcerated, and all these other additional costs that we incur by not helping these people treat their medical condition, they far outweigh what it would cost to treat it.
Do you all know about some of the other surgeries that are, I don't know if they're common, but some of the other surgeries that some individuals, male to females, have, or is like facial feminization or shaving their Adam's apple down. Do the insurance companies or does Aetna cover that?
So Charlize actually does have, and I forget the name of it. It's a pretty common procedure where she has the hair removed from her face.
Electrolysis.
Yes.
Yes, she has that done. I don't remember whether
every single week, $75 a week, not covered.
Right, and they also consider that cosmetic, and that is something that the WPATH considers medically necessary to treat gender dysphoria, and that's yet another thing that Aetna, who recognizes some of the gender path or the WPATH standards for transgender healthcare, is that their policy is just so arbitrary in how they pick and choose what they're going to cover.
It is, but and here's the thing: just let's say there are within the we keep talking about the WPATH standards. I do want to emphasize that the WPATH standards for treatment of gender dysphoria have been expressly adopted by the American Medical Association in Resolution 122. And so it's not something that happened in Holland or Germany or Thailand and we are just pulling that up. This is the AMA said this is the standard in the United States of America.
Mm-hmm. And followed widely in the medical community.
Yes. And so let's say that there are, I don't know the exact number, 25, 30 medically necessary, medically accepted procedures that can be utilized to treat gender dysphoria. Patient A might need 8 of them. Patient B might need 4. Patient C might need 15. But for each individual, the only people that can make that determination of medical necessity are their healthcare professionals that they deal with. Mm-hmm. And Aetna puts them through those steps and says, okay, you've got to get one, sometimes two, sometimes three letters from a treating healthcare professional and say, this is what this patient needs to treat this condition. And that's
again,
where the problem arises is that they do that and then they say, okay, well, we read that. And yeah, that is one of the medically necessary treatments or procedures for treatment of this condition, but we're not going to cover it anyway.
But again, all illnesses are treated that way.
Right.
It's not like, okay, you have this, you take this pill and you're fine. With cancer, some people have surgery.
One chemo treatment,
yeah.
Right.
You might need 10.
Or radiation versus chemo.
You might need radiation versus
chemo. Right.
There are all kinds of things, and that's just can't. It's like that with every illness.
Uh-huh.
Some people are sick for a week with something.
Right.
Some people are sick for a month. Some people need hospitalization. Some people don't. Are you going to tell people, well, he didn't have to go to the hospital for his pneumonia, so why are you? I'm not going to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous.
It is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I mean, it's certainly not experimental. And I mean, we know these things work if they're used. And we, as Casey brought up earlier, we know how bad it is if they're not. We know the tragedy, the disaster that comes to people if
suicide
they're not.
Suicide rates are just ridiculous.
Just out of control.
If you could treat a condition rather than let someone get so depressed over it that they, you know, kill themselves, why would you not?
41% of trans people attempt suicide.
Yeah.
41. If we had that kind of stat in any other demographic in this country, people would go, oh my God.
Absolutely.
Right.
You know, but the trans community seems to be invisible to all of those, you know,
but on the
outrageous concerns, you know, like, wow.
Yeah, and then the backside of it is that, I mean, there's actually, this is a treatment procedure that works. It's known in the medical community, if you do this, if you follow this, you know, these standards, it will work. It's almost 100% strike rate on that.
Yeah, it's amazing that they're not seeing the light. And most of these procedures are, I mean, if you take, for example, if there was a time comes that I need to have a hysterectomy, that's going to be covered. They're not going to question it. It's going to go through. Very common procedure. The cost of it has come down over years. They can get a tiny scar or no scar at all. It doesn't have to be this big incision. You know, all this stuff. It's all these kinds of improvements, and it's a well-established procedure. Same procedure for a female-to-male trans person denied.
What's fascinating,
you know, and it's the same procedure, and they pay for hysterectomies, thousands, millions of them.
Mm-hmm. Is that despite that the WPATH standards have been adopted by the American Medical Association, I'm not aware of any medical school that teaches anything about transgender healthcare whatsoever, let alone treating gender dysphoria.
Do you know, we had somebody on, and I forgot who, a number of years ago, and said they spent a day.
One day. They go over for one day. Okay, I stand corrected.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
just one school, one day.
Right.
Transgender patients are going to good medical facilities and teaching their doctors.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's who's doing the teaching, essentially, in many, many cases. Mm-hmm. But the information's available. You know, I mean, and if nobody enforces their rights, if people don't step up and enforce their rights, then no progress will be made.
A number of years ago, there were several famous cases of female to male, did not have the hysterectomy, contracted uterine cancer or
right.
ovarian cancer, and the insurance company wouldn't treat them because now you're a male.
So from my understanding, that still happens sometimes. So Aetna is supposed to be the most LGBT friendly, like we talked about, but for the health insurance companies who aren't Aetna, a lot of them deny transgender healthcare altogether. And then sometimes the ones that do cover it will say, once you've transitioned from male to female, then we're not going to treat prostate cancer. Or once you've transitioned from female to male, we're not going to treat breast cancer because men don't get breast cancer. And that's not just
that's not true,
necessary.
Which they do.
Which,
yeah,
they right.
do.
1% of breast cancers occur in men. So that's very frightening and should be to every single male
mm-hmm.
that if you ever contract breast cancer, which usually is a very virulent form of breast cancer, if you ever contract breast cancer, is your insurance company going to cover you?
Yeah.
What about the insurance company just covering the person and covering what's wrong with them?
Well, you know, part of this, it starts
seems
off
like
with
such a great idea.
Well, it does.
It's simple.
But logistically, you know, I mean, claims come in. And someone just has data points and code numbers.
Yep.
And so what they get is, I got somebody legal male asking for a hysterectomy. There's no way I can make that add up as being covered under just, you know, basic things.
And it's, you know, and I do health IT,
uh-huh.
and it's a very common thing that the software itself is the one that automatically kicks
right.
it out, and they haven't bothered to go in and change.
Well, fix it, Patty. That's what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's your job. Yeah.
You're on the inside.
It's her fault. As usual.
Come on, you got your breast done. Now
I
fix
am,
that.
I gotta do this. That's right, because it's just automatically kicking it out, and that is pervasive.
Right.
That's pervasive across the industry.
Right, but you'd think, then at least on the appeal, then there's actually a human being who's trained and has is actually not just putting data into a computer and have a program kick out a denial.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get to appeal point. which Charlize went through in another part of this case, and still they stuck to their guns on, you know, just a slightly different issue, which we could talk about. But, you know, they're choosing that even though their policy says we're recognizing gender dysphoria as a treatable medical condition for purposes of other parts of the policy, it's not even that. Mm-hmm. It's just it's not. It's and that they
okay.
can't explain
so
that.
So there has to be a way to check off something that we're not expecting. Last year, Dallas was hit with a little mini Ebola epidemic. Ebola doesn't happen in this country. There wasn't a place to check off Ebola.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because there's a thing that also comes with the ACA called meaningful use. And for healthcare electronic systems, meaningful use means that I'm using a product that's been certified as in for meaningful use, and there's like 1, 2, and 3, and it's going on, but that it has all of these components and it has all of this capacity, and so those are being brought into the industry on a gradual basis. And meaningful use 3 is up now, and one of the things that they're including is you have to have the capacity to record a person's sexual orientation and a person's gender identity, how they perceive themselves. And it has to be, like, you have to have buckets for it. You don't have to record it on every person coming in the door, every patient, but it's there and if it's needed. And so
there has to be the option.
Yeah, and so that'll be rolling in 2017-ish, 2018-ish.
Oh, this is stepping in the right direction.
So that we have that capacity to record those things when it's relevant to your medical care.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Otherwise, and it's not, you know, people don't need to know I'm gay to go in and get a sore throat.
Yeah.
You know,
who's not
treated. Right. You know,
right. Patty, who's not going to know?
You know, hey, my doctor's gay.
So
okay, so another instance, and this is less common than transgender. What about people who are intersex? They might have, for all intents and purposes, they present male. They were raised male. They are male, but they have a vestigial female organ somewhere that needs to be removed for whatever medical reason.
Right, and I'm not sure how that plays out in the insurance companies. I mean, Patty, you might have a better answer than I do on that.
And in fact, well, there's HL7 standards, which is used throughout the industry to communicate information electronically. And the HL standard for gender, and they call it administrative sex, which is a good move, because clinically there could be a different gender, but administrative sex simply means you're legal. Your legal gender.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only options are male, female, unknown, and other. And so we've been working to try to get some of those expanded as well. Mm-hmm. Because that, you know, what does an intersex person do? You know, there's an LGBT liaison officer in Atlanta that discovered after giving birth to her child, who's almost grown, and with her partner for a very long time, discovered through a medical investigation later, for different reasons, that she's intersex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's undescended testes and
wow.
other things. And so, you know, you don't discover till later on in life, but now suddenly, you know, I'm intersex. It changes your self-identity.
Right.
You know, but you can't record it anywhere in the medical world. You know, it doesn't seem that way. It doesn't seem you can.
They
do
always
that.
Make fun of me because I use my phone just for a phone. I don't use it for all this other stuff and other things I write.
I texted you. I didn't get it.
I know. I text David all
that's
the time.
American, David.
I'm like, David, did you get my text? No.
Other things I write. And so without these electronic medical forms, and you have a doctor who just keeps your records by hand, he can write out what's wrong.
Oh, yeah.
So you and your software, Patty.
Yeah, but you're going to have to come along. You have to come along.
No, I don't.
So it is possible.
I'm with our ancient equipment. Actually, it's new now.
It is possible that Aetna could come back and say, you know what, let's just get this over with and offer a monetary settlement. Is that what your
right.
client will take?
Well, Charlize is not looking just for a monetary settlement. Charlize is awesome. She's such a good-hearted woman, and she doesn't just want some monetary recovery for herself. She wants to expand transgender healthcare policies to where they're all non-discriminatory, and that means no discrimination against a person for being transgender, not just for treating gender dysphoria, but for any health care that they need. Like we talked about earlier, some policies still won't treat an ear infection if somebody's transgendered, and that's just ridiculous. And so just to put the discrimination to an end altogether.
What's a transgender ear?
I don't know. You'd have to ask our client.
Well,
I don't have one.
Well, we'll thumb through the Aetna policy and see if it's in there.
What's the transgender ear microbe that's causing the infection? Yeah. That's
you know, it gets so ridiculous. This case could help everybody, though.
Everybody.
Absolutely.
Because everybody could contract something that isn't the usual thing, and if the insurance company doesn't know how to deal with it, they're not going to want to cover it, and they're going to fight you on it like they did with AIDS for a decade.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, in a broader sense, yes, that one of the things that this underscores is that the arbitrariness of insurance company policies that fly in the face of medically accepted standards of care. And this is just happens to be a transgender person on that level, but it does underscore the problem. And the fact here is that I think Aetna has worked so hard in some ways to make it look like they're really paying attention. I mean, if you read this read the policy, you can Google it online. Anybody can. It's a gender. Just look up Google Aetna gender reassignment surgery, and they'll come up, and you can read through it. It's pages and pages of sites and all that. And it shows me this is not negligence. It's not like, oops, we made a mistake, or oops, we overlooked that. I mean, this is planned out to. We're going to choose some things. It's intentionally. Oh, yeah. We're intentionally going to be discriminatory, which is in spite of the effort and their good, whatever good intention they might have, it's the worst kind of thing. I mean, it is really callous.
Right.
It is really. You see, we care, but no money. So no, if there's money problem now we don't care. All of a sudden.
We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Lauren Landis. Michael Heineman and Casey Crummell are attorneys who are representing a trans woman in her healthcare lawsuit. We'll be back with more right after this.
Hi, this is Patty Fink, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. Our guests are Michael Heineman and Casey Crummell. They're attorneys representing a trans woman in her healthcare case. Casey, you were just going to jump in and say something before the break.
Yeah, it's also real interesting that they spend so much, like we were talking about earlier, such a marketing decision for them to support the LGBT community. I mean, they spend so much money on sponsoring all of these different LGBT activities. I mean, throughout The Voice, I think that there are the Dallas Voice, there are at least 3 or 4 different events going on where Aetna is a sponsor. And it just makes you wonder, if they have the money to sponsor the LGBT community in that regard, how can they not have the money to cover these medically necessary surgeries?
These fairly rare medical surgeries.
Extremely rare.
Right.
It's just amazing to me that for that very thing, that a company could, you know, tout their 100% rating with the Human Rights Campaign, because it's almost a form of bait and switch, you know, where they lure you in with that, but then when it comes down to the nitty gritty where the rubber meets the road, they're not going to pay for that.
Yeah, but so I'm kind of switching gear a little bit on this, but you know, we've seen this in other areas where, you know, they get their A rating, you know, or, you know, Dallas is doing it, and we're not Houston, thank God. And but, you know, Dallas gets a lot of mileage out of being an LGBT friendly city. But and it's based in some part on the city ordinance, anti-discrimination ordinance. But I'll let Casey get into this a little bit here. We've been looking into that too, because I'll just hint at, we are actively looking for a straight sexual orientation employment discrimination suit to bring. Either kind of discrimination, because it's time for courts to actually articulate.
I've been saying for years,
I have
the
too.
Sexual orientation
yes.
case yes. that will make a difference is the gay employer who fires the straight employee, and that is a way that everybody will finally get it. Oh, we all have a sexual orientation.
Well, not just that. Yeah. But how about just a regular good old boy company here in Texas that thinks somebody is gay?
Right.
Perceived.
Right. And they think they're gay. They've been there 25 years. And they said, you know what? We don't have queers in our company. And they can say that to their face under Texas law because there's none. We don't have queers in our company, and you're queer, and I've decided you're queer, and you're leaving.
Yeah.
You know, you're fired. And that case, that's the case, I think. It doesn't have to be a gay employer.
There needs to be a lot more of them, because it's time for case law to start being written that's going to make it crystal clear that – and forget state law, getting back to the city ordinance, it provides no remedy to the person who was fired. Mm-hmm. Or discriminated against on the basis of sexual orientation.
I ordered public records last week for every complaint that's been filed based on the 2002 ordinance prohibiting discrimination based on sexual orientation by an employer here in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And I got back from the city about 3 days ago.
Mm-hmm. That was quick.
Right. Yeah, they're pretty fast. I think they have.
Well, there weren't that many to find.
Right, there weren't.
So they average about 7 a year.
So I got back less than 4 pages, a list of complaints, and the list was less than 4 pages long, and the vast majority, I would say over 75 or 80%, were dismissed, and no fine was ever incurred by the employer. And then, honestly, even the few that did have a fine against the employer, you look at it and you're going, $200 or $500 for a business is a slap on the wrist. That's not going to stop anybody from discriminating. So it's a great policy, but I just think it's ineffective.
It is, well, it doesn't have teeth. I mean, I've been working years on this.
Yeah, she has. And I've always said the same thing. We need something with more bite.
And but municipally, they can't do... They're kind of limited about what municipality can turn into.
But Houston's ordinance was going to have several $1,000 fine. Still, to a business, that's not necessarily anything, but...
Yeah, but still, it doesn't have... If it doesn't provide... And again, love Dallas. I'm happy and proud of Dallas taking stands and making it clear, at least in primarily cosmetic or symbolic ways, such as the ordinances. But... If it doesn't have a remedy, if it doesn't give something back to the aggrieved person, to the person who's discriminated against, then for two things happen. One, there's no real punishment. Mm-hmm. And two, there's no real incentive for this person who has been discriminated against to really
do anything.
Pursue it and hold. That's where, you know, getting back to the Aetna having the A rings, it's really easy to hang bells and whistles on ourselves and saying any of these organizations, the city or the insurance company, all that. But that's great, but, show us by providing us a real right with a real remedy that encourages the people who are being discriminated against to pursue it and hold people accountable. And until that happens, how much is this going on that no one talks about, willing to talk about?
And three, what it does, it doesn't prevent the person who did it from doing it again.
Right.
Exactly right.
Right. But most of the cases under the non-discrimination ordinance in Dallas, over its history since 2002, it's passed May 8th, 2002, and a 13-2 vote by the Dallas City Council, and just updated recently.
Mm-hmm.
But most of those cases do result in a mediation that the complainant wants. Mm-hmm. And they really want two things out of that. They want an apology, and they want the policy to change at their previous employer.
A good example.
And everybody then moves on, but they get that.
A good example of one is a gay couple wanted their wedding announcement in the Dallas Morning News. Dallas Morning News policy at the time was no wedding announcements. They sued under this ordinance, and the policy changed. So the punishment that Dallas Morning News got was they have to accept $1,000 from every gay couple who wants their ad in the paper.
Yeah.
That's what we were forcing them to do.
Yeah.
Things got real hard for them after that.
It was. You know, it's tough for these businesses
sometimes. Oh, gosh.
But you know what I think this ordinance really does? it says who we are. And I think Houston's ordinance says who they are.
I agree.
There's a bit of news in this from that happened yesterday. The state, the Texas Republic, the Republican Party of Texas, the Texas GOP met an executive committee, as they do, just like the Democratic Party. And there were two proposals that got shot down. One was to put on the primary ballot for Republicans in March a secession from the union.
I saw that.
That
yes.
got shot down immediately.
I sent a message. I wanted to know if they would allow Dallas to have a separate one to secede from
Texas.
Them.
Yeah. Oh, that would be great.
Very fair.
But in another one was the guy that led the anti-hero stuff in Houston, Jared Woodfill, is really trying to become the chair of the Texas Republican Party, and that's his mm-hmm. whole motivation here. But he had proposed that they move the convention that's supposed to be here in June for Texas Republicans be in Dallas. He wanted to have it moved to Houston because we had this update to our 13-year-old ordinance, and it would punish Dallas, you know.
Right.
And that was voted down by a nearly unanimous vote.
Wow.
So he was quoted as saying, they're taking away everything I care about. And you know what I say? Good.
Good.
You know, good
right.
for the Republican Party of Texas.
Absolutely.
Sane rationality prevailed there.
I enjoyed Dallas having that meeting and updating mm-hmm. the policy. Was it a week after Hero failed?
Exactly.
I mean, nice
week.
Timing, Dallas.
Yeah.
So it was good.
And really, we've been working on that for a couple of years.
It had been in the works for a long time. That was just a coincidence.
But it was a good one.
Yeah. Going back to your client, you know, I know, mentally it's got to be a challenge just transitioning alone. If everything goes smoothly,
mm-hmm.
then to have a lawsuit on top of it, fighting your employer or fighting the insurance company or whatever, you know, that's got to be, you know, heavily weighed on an individual. How's she doing?
You know, when we filed this and when we started talking about it, I said to her, you know, it was clear to us. I mean, her objective is that she wants to make law. She wants to make a difference for other people. And I explained to her then, I said, listen, that's great, and that's what we want to do too. But you're always my client. You're always my only client on this. I don't represent every other trans. We don't represent every other transgender person. We're not representing the entire LGBT community. We're representing
right.
you. If your objective changes for any reason, any time, let us know, and we will adjust our strategy. But she's been very, very consistent and very clear that she wants lasting change, and
right.
you know, everything that we know about her, Casey knows her much better than longer than I do. But you know, this is a woman who, again, working for a government contractor with security. She's got security clearance, working for a government contractor in Greenville. I mean, she's a outstanding human being, and. In the process of her gender transition at work and coming out at work, she has consistently taken the lead and educated her company on, listen, here are my rights, and this is why I'm doing what I'm doing, and they have been good and accommodating. But she is a progressive person, and one of the things I was talking about before about, you know, rights and no remedies, you know, this is so important that when there is one, if people who have a remedy when they're discriminated against and don't exercise it, it doesn't end. It's nice to have the law in the books. It's nice to have the statement and an ordinance. Nice, all these things are great. But if people don't pursue it and say it means something, we're going to use it meaningfully, then it has no meaning. It's just as words on paper.
And Charlie,
and she understands that.
Her employer has continued to be great. I mean, one of her concerns with filing the lawsuit is that to get to Aetna, you know, on one of the claims, we had to sue her employer as mm-hmm. well, even though they've been very accepting mm-hmm. of her. And so, you know, we offered to reach out and to speak with them. And, you know, they, of course, didn't want to comment, which is pretty typical. Mm-hmm. But they haven't taken, of course, any retaliatory action.
Oh, that's awesome.
They've continued to treat her very well. Mm-hmm. And she's been very fortunate in that regard. I think that, at least in my experience with my friends who are transgender, transitioning is really when that becomes an issue in the employment or in the housing context. Mm-hmm. And so she's been very fortunate, and I hate to use the word fortunate because she's been very strong.
But you hate to say fortunate that she's just getting what everybody else
gets.
Yes. Right. Is she fortunate? No.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's
exactly.
fortunate in the context of other people just getting fired.
Right.
Exactly. How much work she has to do to get...
Oh, bravo, Charlie.
What I take for granted every day. Yeah,
you know, but I'll bet she's the kind of person that her healing as a trans person and becoming a woman, I'll bet this lawsuit and doing something for other people is actually helping in her healing.
I believe that completely.
Yeah.
She articulates that to us constantly, too.
She's a Gloria Steinem of, you know, trans women out there. I mean, it really takes somebody with that kind of stamina to, you know, see it through.
Mm-hmm. And lots of landmark cases, it's not that it was even necessarily the best case, but it was all the right circumstances that came together.
Right.
You know, with the marriage equality cases, you know, Obergefell was just the one who had the heart-wrenching story, so his is the name that's on top there.
Right.
It wasn't any better necessarily than anybody else's story. It was just the right circumstances and the right story that came together.
Yeah, and in part, this is, I mean, again, the timing of this provision of the Obamacare, American Affordable Care Act, happening at just the same time, being redefined and being kind of more clarified as, no, we intend this to be a civil rights provision with a civil rights remedy. That timing was just about just perfect for where she was in this process.
And also over the last couple of years, the Justice Department has made it very clear that discrimination against a transgender person is sex discrimination. It is covered.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's throughout EEO now. And I noticed in the filing that there was several EEO forms, I guess.
Yeah, we did have to, because of the gender discrimination part in the employment context, that's Title VII civil rights claim. That's the one that involves the employer also, because Aetna is the agent of the employer. It's complicated.
Right.
But it required her to do that. The Affordable Care Act violation does not require anything like that. The other thing on the EEO stuff is, the one thing we did find also is that in the spring, the EEO had released an internal memo to their district offices telling them they want look out for this.
Interesting.
Yeah, they said if your health insurance company does not have non-discriminatory policies, that you're liable for it. And so when Charlize and I went down to the EEOC here in Dallas, we went together and we went up there, and the lady who works for the EEOC and does intake needed to make a copy of what I had printed off from the EEOC.
From their own policies.
Oh,
we had to show them their
right.
policies.
She was like, I'm not sure about this. I'm going to need it. Can I make a copy and take it to my supervisor? I said, well, sure, it's off your website, but be my guest.
But that's what it takes.
Wow. We're running out of time. I just want to get, what is the timetable now of...
My guess is
if they don't file any more motions for extensions.
Sure,
well,
things can happen. And they will.
And they will.
I would hope that we would have told Charlize. We're trying to make sure that we're ahead of the game at every step in terms of having all of the things we have to turn over to everybody as soon as they get in the game, so that we're never waiting for anything to happen. I think the soonest we could hope to have a trial at the trial court level would be probably the beginning of 2017, either way it goes, or if it goes down before then. And this one of the possibilities is that it's struck before we get to trial, which is fine by us in a weird way because, again, we're here to make law. So the sooner we get climbing up the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals to the Supreme Court
they
on that,
tell us no, we'll
better
go to
off.
The next
that's
level
fine.
So we can
here
hit
we
it
go.
Yet.
That's what we want anyway. We can't lose on that level anyway.
Okay, so it would be a jury trial, actually, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
At the trial court level.
Yes.
That's tricky. Who do you even ask, gee, help me with picking a jury on a transgender discrimination case? I guess that'll be another thing that you'll be the experts in. exactly.
So, we better be.
So Aetna wouldn't take it this far. if they weren't planning on appealing as far as they can go, you're planning on appealing as far as this could go. So this could be like the next 5 years till it hits the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Either this one or another case that's very,
very
similar to it.
Right.
Yeah.
The initial sign from Aetna is that they, I mean, the request for the extension, all that, I'm reading as they'd rather not get tangled up into this thing.
We're not seeing any other cases that would go to the Supreme Court.
You're here to tangle.
Actively tangling, yes.
We are out of time. I want to thank Michael Hindman and Casey Crummell. They are attorneys representing Charlize. She is a transgender woman who is suing for equality in her health care.
Thank you very much, and keep us updated.
We will.
Come back about a year from now, and we can get to,
we will
update everybody.
All right, it's a lot of fun. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here. Mm-hmm.